Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here, and it's great on our last Sunday to have an opportunity to share some of the things that God's laid on my heart and some things that Emily and I have been thinking about. And hopefully there's something here that's very helpful for everybody this morning. We're 3 days away now from heading off Wednesday. We're still boxes all over our house, suitcases maybe that were overpacked, that some stuff will have to come out again. So we're still working through our way and getting ready and getting organised. But we just publicly want to thank everyone in the church for the support and the warmth we felt from conversations we've had with people, to the prayers that we know that are being offered up for us, to being able to put on our coffee morning here and to share with the children and to share with you. It's been really wonderful, and we've really felt warmly supported by the church, and we're really glad to be being sent out by Emmanuel Baptist Church, and we look forward to keeping up contact as we're away. A small update then is we were really praying and hoping for our visa to come through before we left, which that seems like a kind of basic thing, but our main visa hasn't come through on time, even though we sent the stuff off long ago. So we'll be travelling in under a tourist visa, and then we possibly might have to leave and re-enter again. So that's something just to continue to pray for. But on more positive news, we're now millionaires. So we went down to Marks & Spencer's Bureau de Change, and basically 60 quid equates to 1 million rupiah. So we went up to how we're going to buy stuff when we're there. They might see us coming and charge us a lot, even more than that. But we went up to the counter, and we were just changing over some money for our initial arrival. And we were alone at the counter, and we were explaining we're going out to Indonesia. And she started counting the money through. And in the meantime, at the counter beside us, a wee lady joined up, and she was just looking for euros. And the woman beside us was counting out. And there you go. There's 5 million. And enjoy it. And all the best now. That sounds very exciting. And we're saying, oh, yes, we're looking forward to it. And the wee woman beside us. So that was exciting. So we're stepping out in faith. And we're stepping out on what will be a very big adventure for us. But anyone, and no matter what stage we're at, I'm not even aware of all the circumstances of the people here, there's always a need to step out in faith. And everyone has different circumstances in front of them. Maybe it's a new phase of life. Maybe it's a new job. Maybe it's a move. Maybe it's moving through education onto a different point. Or maybe it's just in our day-to-day walk, just that need to continue to step out in faith. And we need God in our lives. And faith in God, faith that we know He is the author and creator of the universe, faith that we can trust Him with our salvation, faith that He has a plan for our lives. And the Bible often gives us great examples of faith. We think of the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11 and all those great men and great women who lived their lives in faith for God. And that's what we want to look at this morning. We want to look at an example that's possibly sometimes neglected in the character of Jonathan, who we sometimes see sandwiched between Saul and between David after him. But the passage I want to read from this morning is 1 Samuel chapter 14. And we'll be reading from verses 1 to 23. 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel are all one narrative together. It's a historical narrative. It's a story that keeps rumbling. So we're jumping into a part of the story here, and it's following on from what's happened before, and it continues to go on after this. But this is one really great example. In my Bible, it has the little title, Jonathan's Daring Plan. I'm reading from the ESV. One day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other Senna. The one crag rose in the north in front of Michmash, and the other in the south in front of Geba. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. And if they say to us, Wait until we come to you. Then we will stand still in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us. So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves. And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, come up to us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said to his armor-bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel. Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor-bearer killed them after him. And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor-bearer made killed about 20 men, within, as it were, a half a furrow's length in an acre of land. And there was a panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled. The earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude was dispersing here and there. Then Saul said to the people who were with him, count and see who has gone from us. And when they had counted, behold, Jonathan and his armor-bearer were not there. So Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here, for the ark of God went at that time with the people of Israel. Now, while Saul was talking to the priest, the tumult in the camp of the Philistines increased more and more. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and went into the battle. And behold, every Philistine sword was against his fellow, and there was very great confusion. Now, the Hebrews who had been with the Philistines before that time and who had gone up with them into the camp, even they also turned to be with the Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. Likewise, when all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines were fleeing, they too followed hard after them in the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed beyond Beth-Aven. I'm just going to pray now. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this passage. We thank you for your word. We thank you that it is alive and living and that it can speak to us, Lord. And we just pray this morning that you would speak and that you would have something helpful and something encouraging and inspiring for us this morning from your word. In Jesus' name, amen. So yes, Jonathan is an incredible character, and this is a very daring plan that he set out to do. He's launching out on his own with his armor bearer to take on the Philistine army. And actually, it's very difficult circumstances. Jonathan's faith here we can see was one that he had even in very difficult circumstances. First of all, if we jump back into the previous chapter, we can see the army that they're facing. In chapter 13, in verses 5 and 6, it tells us about the Philistine army. And the Philistines mustered to fight with Israel 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and troops like the sand on the seashore in multitude. So they had 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen and troops, or 6,000 horsemen, sorry, and the troops like the sand of the sea. So this was a huge army, a huge number the Philistines had gathered together. In contrast, if still in chapter 13, we look at verse 15, it tells us, the rest of the people went up after Saul to meet the army, and Saul numbered the people who were present with him, about 600 men. So the enemy was huge, the Philistine army, massive numbers, the Israelite number, very, very small, about 600. It's difficult to contemplate even the difference between the two sizes of the armies. If you're thinking of even the chariots, 30,000 and 600 Israelites, that's 50 chariots to every one Israelite as they would go into battle with them. And also going further down, when I was younger, one of my favourite verses, not for any spiritual reason, was but 1 Samuel 13 and 20 in the King James had the word coulter in it, so we used to always read this little part of the Bible. But actually the coulter is a kind of farm implement, and we read in verse 22, so on the day of the battle there were neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people with Saul and Jonathan, but Saul and Jonathan his son had them. Basically, the Philistines had engineered things so that there was no blacksmith in the land. They feared that the Israelites would be able to gather weapons for themselves and weapons for their army to equip themselves. So the Israelites were only left with two swords, one for Saul and one for Jonathan. And in the meantime, they were trying to sharpen their coulters and their farm weapons or anything they could gather together to use for their army. So you think, first of all, if we're thinking of a faith like Jonathan's, he had faith in a very difficult circumstance. The enemy in front of them was colossal, huge in number. They were very small in number. They were all but weaponless. And the enemy that was right there in front of them was huge. For Jonathan to launch out and to have faith and to go at them, a huge enemy in front of him. And even as I was thinking of this and reflecting it in our own context, we think of the enemy in front of us in the world today, or the world that we're in, how hard-pressed Christians are in society. Everywhere you look, in politics, in the news, Christians are just more and more marginalized. I see Ken Ham was trying to reclaim the rainbow for his ark over in America. They were having the rainbow shining across the ark, and people were up in arms and complaining that this was trying to reclaim the rainbow from homosexuality. And Christians, no matter what way we turn, if we look in the news, we can see that in society we're up against it. And it's very hard to speak up for Christianity. And the world that we live in today and the society we're in, we've a very big enemy in front of us, just as Jonathan and the Israelites were faced with here. Not only was the enemy huge physically, but look at the situation they're in. Chapter 14, which we read from, really describes the physical layout of the land where they're at. It mentions that they're on one side and the Philistines are on the other side, and basically between them there's this huge trench that's been cut by a river, and it's craggy on one side and craggy on the other. It gives us the two names in verse 4, Bozez and Senna. And basically Bozez equates to slippery, and Senna roughly means thorny. So they're hardly names that would inspire someone to make that journey from one side across to the other, down a thorny slope, through a deep valley, and up on the thorny and the slippery side again. So Jonathan was stepping out in faith here. And it can't be faith that was based on his circumstances. He can't be inspired by the strength of the army he was a part of compared to the Philistines. He kind of looked at the lay of the land and thought that was easy. Jonathan stepped out and had great faith. And he didn't really have basis in situation or circumstance at all to step out in faith. It wasn't just mere optimism. Sometimes people are naturally optimistic and they're willing to give something a go even though they're not sure. But this situation was extremely difficult. So we can face enemies, whether it's in the world today, or difficult circumstances as well. In our lives, we often come into difficult situations. Maybe it's an ongoing thing, or maybe it's something for a short time. Perhaps we come into a situation where we're struggling with an illness or something financial, or in our work, or maybe it's in our spiritual walk. We struggle with doubts, or we struggle with a besetting sin that gets us down. There can often be that enemy, but also a situation that we go through that can be very difficult. In my personal case, I've shared in church before about struggling with a depression that was really real and set in, and it was something that was hard to have faith in that situation, because these things come along and they just really press down on you and take so much of your time and take so much of your energy. And in that situation, you can be caught up in the situation. But faith is outside of that. Jonathan's faith wasn't anything to do with his situation. And there's a passage that was very useful to me in Habakkuk 3, verses 17 to 19. It says, "Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places." So Jonathan had this deep faith in God, and he wanted to follow him despite the circumstances and the situation and the enemy in front of him. Jonathan had great faith in difficult circumstances. Not only that, Jonathan's faith stepping out, but all around him, he was surrounded by apathy and cynicism, and he had faith in the middle of that. An interesting little bit, at the start of that first verse, it talks about them, Jonathan setting out that plan, let us go over to the Philistines on the other side of the garrison, but adds in, but he did not tell his father. And that's quite interesting. These chapters in general that we're looking at now really is the decline of Saul's reign. It's quite sad to see, or Saul had been set as king over Israel, and Saul had been actually set the challenge of liberating Israel from the Philistines. But time and time again, we see Saul not acting in faith, and we see him making poor decisions. And that's the period of the Bible that we're in here at the minute. So they're sitting in this really difficult situation. The enemy seems overwhelming. And where is the king sitting, who should be the one stepping out in faith? He's away from the battlefield. He's in this pomegranate cave, hiding away. He doesn't seem to be following his call that the Lord had set him on liberating the Israelites. He doesn't seem to be inspired by it. We don't seem to get any sense of faith from Saul. Again, in chapter 13 of 1 Samuel and verses 13 and 14, Samuel says that Saul's reign has been rejected. And Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God with which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." So Saul's rule and his reign have been rejected. Actually, something that's very sad about that is Jonathan, his son, would be an excellent king for Israel. He's a great warrior. He's a great leader. He's a man of faith. And he never had that opportunity to be king over Israel because his father's rule and his line was rejected. Also, at the start of 14, it goes into great detail to describe the priest who was with Saul, who he kept with him, Ahijah. And it goes back through his line to Eli. And we can read in Eli again, when we go back to chapter 3, that Eli's priestly line was rejected as well. So we have Saul, the king, whose line has been rejected and his authority has been rejected. And we also have the priest with him, whose rule and reign have been rejected. And you've got to wonder why Saul has chosen to keep this priest with him. Perhaps it's to appear religious. Perhaps it's to appear active. Perhaps it's to seem like he's doing the right thing, even though he's not. And it's quite easy to slip into the habit of being a religious person, to be someone who wants to appear to do the right thing or to go through the motions without really having the faith behind it. We want our faith to be active like Jonathan's and not just be bench warmers or someone that's just coldly going along like Saul is here. If you look at the contrast between Saul sitting inactive and Jonathan, it's quite remarkable. Jonathan's looking for opportunities, obviously. Jonathan's not just sitting back in the distance. He's obviously waited for this perfect time. So the Philistine army was huge, but they've just set an outpost towards the edge of this cliff edge, a smaller detachment that is going to keep a watch over the Israelites. And Jonathan sees this as a great opportunity for God to work. There's a smaller group that have broken away. The Israelites aren't even demanding the full attention of the Philistine army. And he's keeping an eye out for this chance. He sees that the small outpost is an opportunity to set in an attack. Actually, we see later on in the passage that there are troops who've abandoned the Israelite army. Many of them went into the caves in the outlying areas just to watch on. And actually, a lot of the Israelites deserted to go over to the Philistines. They thought at that stage the situation was too difficult, and they just left. But later on, they did rejoin the Israelites. Whenever the battle was being won, some of the troops were very quick to join in again, who had deserted or had went over to the Philistines. And you can see that their faith was based on the circumstances being positive. And Saul as well was quick to join in whenever he saw positive circumstances. But Jonathan, he was just working on faith alone and working on faith and not by sight. So he had faith in difficult circumstances. He had faith amid the apathy and cynicism around him. But Jonathan's faith wasn't based on nothing. Jonathan had a faith based on truth, and he had a faith based on God and the character of who he is and his relationship with him. And God, who he knew from the history of the Bible and the history of the Israelites. If you read and look at the things that he mentions when he's formulating his plan, it gives us an insight into Jonathan's understanding of God. He said in verse 6 that nothing can hinder the Lord from saving. And that shows that Jonathan had great faith in God's power and his authority. He knew that God is the one in control. God is the one with great power to do whatever he wants. Nothing can stop the Lord from saving. He is the one with the ultimate authority. He also knows that God is capable of doing great things. He mentions that little line, "It may be that the Lord will work for us." He has that vision and that insight to know that the Lord is not only in control and but that power that God has, he is capable of doing wonderful and huge things. God can take two Israelites against the might of that whole Philistine army, and God can achieve it if it's in his will, because he has that authority. He also knows the way that God usually works. He says that God can save by many or by few. God uses people. God uses servants, people like you and I. And that's God's way of working. So he understood God's authority. He understood that God can do great things, and he understood that God uses people. I like to think, as he made what is obviously a very difficult journey across to the Philistines, that he was thinking about God and he was thinking about his promises. Promises like in Leviticus chapter 26 verses 7 and 8 where it says, "You shall chase your enemies and they shall fall before you by the sword. 5 of you shall chase 100 and 100 of you shall chase 10,000 and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword." Perhaps he thought of Gideon and how God was able to use few to achieve great victory. Perhaps he thought of Deuteronomy chapter 28 verse 7 that says, "The Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before you. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you 7 ways." And for us, as we seek to step out in faith for God, whether it is just in our day-to-day life or to evangelize to those in the workplace or to go abroad on a mission trip, we know that we can trust God. We know the character of God. We know that he's worthy of serving. And we know the promise from Romans chapter 8, verse 31 that says, "If God be for us, who can be against us?" So we had a faith based on truth and also an understanding of God's gracious nature. Jonathan understood the power, but again, there's a little bit there that's really lovely to read, where he says, "It may be that the Lord will work for us." He's not going out and having to follow through on a difficult plan that the Lord has set before him. He's stepping out in faith here, and he understands the character of God. He's not making a demand of God that God will do this because we're the Israelites, or God will do this because we're great. I have a good plan. I have good warrior experience. I have good intelligence. He knows it's in the character of God to work for us and to be gracious. And God is gracious to us in so many ways. God's gracious to us in the very salvation that we have. And God's gracious in choosing to use us, flawed as we are. Whenever we step out to do things for God, we don't step out in our own might, but we step out in his. And it's him that can achieve the great things. One of the versions of the Bible that was reading as I was studying, I think it's the NIV, said, "Perhaps the Lord will work for us." And just as I was spending time thinking about that and thinking about Jonathan's attitude, he's really stepping out saying, who knows what God can do? He's not assured of the victory. He's not. There's no guarantee that something that's going to happen here. He really genuinely is stepping out in faith. And with that attitude that says, if we do our part for God, who knows what he can achieve? It's like the farmer who plants his seed on land. He goes through his parts, ploughs the land, plants the seed, and we have to rely on God then to bring the weather and to make that happen. And that's the way Jonathan's going here. He knows God can be gracious and he can pour that rain and pour that blessing on things. And we have to play our part. And again, that who knows what God can do, to apply to us in our situation whenever we try to work for God, whether it's in planning the holiday Bible club or whether it's having the courage to speak to someone in the workplace or whether it's facing one of these difficult situations that can come up against us. You just don't know what God is capable of doing. And that's the attitude Jonathan has. We know God is powerful. We know he has authority. And we know he's a gracious and loving God who will work for us as well. And it's something that's very encouraging to be reminded of. So Jonathan had faith based on truth, faith rooted in grace. And Jonathan's faith inspired. The response of the armor bearer in verse 7 is incredible. It's a lovely verse to read. It reminds me of Naomi and Ruth and their exchange. Reading from verse 7, "And his armor bearer said to him, 'Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul.'" It's a lovely response. This chapter that we're reading in this story, if you've heard Emily and I sharing about when we were initially called, we went through a period where I was very firm and very definite that I felt a call of God to go out. But Emily needed to feel that same call as well because we're both going out to do the same thing. It wasn't a case of me wanting to step out and Emily coming with me. Emily had to feel that same sense of call too. And I read this passage and the armor bearer's response and knowing that Jonathan was stepping out in faith and how that inspired. And that was something that was a prayer in my heart as well, that our faith can inspire other people to join us. Perhaps the armor bearer had lots of reasons to want to follow Jonathan. Jonathan in chapter 13 had already achieved a great victory. Jonathan was a great leader. He'd achieved many good things. He was obviously a very talented warrior. So he could have been inspired by Jonathan, the person he was, but I think it's obvious from reading this that he's inspired by the faith of Jonathan. It's a very wise plan that he set out to do. Whenever they went down into the valley and the armor bearer had went with them, he said the plan was that if they call us up, we will go to them and we will know the Lord has given them to us rather than if they come down. And it's interesting to think about why he wanted to be called up. Jonathan knew that would be a sign of arrogance. They've already made a small detachment and a small outpost, and he didn't think the Israelites were worthy of their attention. And for them to say, come up to us, it showed that they didn't even think that they were enough of a threat to go down and deal with them. So the Israelites did call them up. And it must have taken some time to make them, once that initial call had happened, they had to make their way up on their hands and feet. And it must have been quite a bit of time before they actually made it up to the Philistines. And yet when they arrived, very quickly we can see that Jonathan and his armor bearer kill 20 by the sword. So the Philistines hadn't even put the attention in to get ready for Jonathan and his armor bearer by the time they got up. So Jonathan initially had this plan. He inspired one man, that armor bearer, and then they started into the battle. Whenever they did their part, then we read about God stepping up and God bringing in the earthquake. But then the whole army of Israelite was inspired by their actions. It started from one man having faith and stepping out for God. One other man joined in, and they inspired the whole army just by stepping out in faith. The 1859 revival in Kells, in 1857 initially, there was a small group of men that were challenged with starting a Sunday school, and they felt inadequate and they felt ill-equipped, and they wanted to seek the Lord before they would start to do that adventure. So there was a group of four men that met together to pray that God would work and that God would use them, and they prayed with that attitude of who knows what God can do. And people started to join in with their prayer group, and one person was saved, and then multiple people were saved. And then the famous revival of 1859 happened. And again, that's an example here in Northern Ireland of one person setting out to pray and setting out in faith, and that inspiring other people and mobilizing them. Contrast Jonathan and how active he is. He's looking out for this outpost and he's willing to go through and to step out in faith. Saul, again, is just sitting back. But once he sees that the victory is being won, he looks onto the battlefield and sees everything that's happened. Saul was maybe hit by a sense of jealousy. This is the second time in a row now where Jonathan has been achieving great victory for God. And then Saul initially goes through the motions again of seeking God's will in the matter. It mentions how they bring the Ark of God out, and then he's using the priest to seek God's will, but he actually asks Ahijah to remove his hand. So he wasn't using faith at all. He went through those motions of seeking to begin that process of looking for God. But when he saw that the battle was being won, he just wanted to jump in because his faith was based on sight and based on circumstances, totally contrary to Jonathan. And actually, it mentions in verse 24, further on than we read, Saul laid an oath on the people saying, "Cursed be the man who eats food until it is evening, and I am avenged on my enemies." So he had a personal agenda. He wanted not to be shown up by Jonathan, his son. He wanted to avenge himself on his enemies, and he was only willing to join in when he saw victory. He was totally working on his own agenda, he was working on his own bat, and he wasn't working off faith. And it's a real contrast to Jonathan, who did step out in faith. And what about those soldiers as well? They were quick to join in. And how quick Saul was to take them back whenever they did come. Those men that had deserted to the Philistines, or those men that had wandered off into the caves, they came back once they knew victory was assured. They were not living by faith, but they were just living for circumstances. The last point then is faith that produces victory. Whenever Jonathan stepped out, whenever they played their part, when they, to use that farmer analogy again, planted the seed, God responded by sending an earthquake and causing a very great confusion. And then if we read verse 23 again, the final part we read, "So the Lord," or "so Yahweh, saved Israel that day." Jonathan had right expectations whenever he said, "God can save by many or a few." Jonathan had faith in God, and God rewarded his faith. And we can take great encouragement by that. And we should seek to live by faith. And we know that God will assure the victory. And we know that God has already assured the greatest victory of all. Whenever he sent his son to die on the cross, he achieved victory over sin, victory over death. And we know that God has the power to save us, and we know we can be sure of our salvation, and we just need to trust him as we step out. No matter what the circumstance or the enemy in front of us, we know that he is one in his character that we can trust. And I hope for Emily and I, as we step out, that we are doing it in faith, and we know that God will provide for us and for everyone here, no matter what situation you're facing. We should have a faith like Jonathan's and say, who knows what God can do, and take great encouragement from this example of Jonathan.